Hello, I'm Aaron Lohr, and this is the Endocrine News Podcast. Increased prescription of opioid medications like oxycodone and hydrocodone have led to widespread misuse of both prescription and non-prescription opioids. But did you know that opioid misuse can significantly impact the endocrine system? The Endocrine Society recently published a scientific statement entitled Exogenous Opioids in the Human Endocrine System, an Endocrine Society scientific statement. The statement reviews data on the use and misuse of opioids and discusses recent research on the endocrine-related clinical implications of opioid use. A link to the statement is provided in today's episode description. Joining me today is an author of the statement, Dr. Nikki Karavitaki. Dr. Karavitaki is professor of endocrinology at the University of Birmingham in the United Kingdom. Dr. Karavitaki, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Thank you very much for the kind invitation, and many thanks to the Endocrine Society for giving us the opportunity to prepare the statement, to have it published, and to disseminate it as well.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, anyone watching the news in recent years knows opioid misuse is a big problem, but just how big of a problem is it?
Well, that's a very good question. As we all know, opioids are administered to relieve various types of pain, but they may also be misused, particularly due to the euphoric effects. And the increasing opioid use and misuse and the dramatic increase in overdose mortality suggests that we are dealing with a public health crisis. And just to mention some numbers, which will give us an idea on the extent of the problem. Approximately 125 million opioid prescriptions were dispensed to American patients in 2023, and there is a wide variation across states. In the same year, nearly 8.6 million Americans aged above 12 years reported misusing prescription opioids in the past year. And from 1999 to 2022, approximately 300,000 people died from overdoses involving prescription opioids. And the number of people who died from an opioid overdose in 2022 was 10 times the number in 1999. And to move a little bit further, according to the World Drug Report 2024, the prevalence of the use of opioids, and this includes opiates and prescription opioids, in the population aged between 15 and 64, in North America was 2.72%, in Europe 0.74%, and in Australia and New Zealand 1.99%. And finally, in 2021, amongst individuals aged 12 years and older in the United States, 1.1 million used heroin in the past year, and 5.6 million people met the criteria for opioid use disorder. So these numbers clearly show that we are experiencing a public health crisis, and these numbers are definitely alarming.
The numbers are sobering indeed. Is it true that not all opioids are the same? How might they be different, and why is that important?
It is true that not all opioids are the same. We know that they exert their physiologic and pharmacologic effects by modulating the endogenous opioid receptor system, a system that has four major opioid receptors, but also there are several other subtypes. So this entire receptor system can be susceptible to pharmacogenomic abnormalities, all of which may impact the opioid's ability to modulate such receptors and can help explain individual and site variabilities regarding specific responses to opioids and their overall effects. Opioids show pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic variability, and this is mainly driven by differences in their physicochemical characteristics like lipophilicity and binding affinity. And it is important for us to be aware of these differences because they help us understand and explain the various clinical effects and potency of each individual opioid.
Now, this scientific statement is coming from the Endocrine Society. So what is the connection between opioid use and the endocrine system?
There is a significant connection between opioid use and endocrine system. There is wide expression of opioid receptors in the endocrine system, and opioids exert various actions on it, many of which have known clinical sequelae, and we have described them in our scientific statement.
And let's talk a little bit about that scientific statement. Why did the Endocrine Society develop it?
As I mentioned earlier on, prescription opioids are used to manage chronic or acute pain by millions of people around the world. And the risks of prescription misuse, opioid use disorder, and overdose have been a growing concern globally. The endocrine effects of opioids can have negative health consequences. So the Endocrine Society was keen to develop a scientific statement, not only to enhance the awareness of various healthcare professionals on these consequences, but also to highlight gaps in knowledge on this field that will open perspectives for exciting and impactful future research. And it is anticipated that by addressing these gaps, there will be improvement in the care of people using or misusing opioids worldwide. And of course, needless to say that I'm very grateful to all my co-authors and collaborators for their exceptional contributions to this statement.
Now, the statement is rich in content, and I invite our listeners, if you really want to dig into it, use the link in today's episode description to review the statement for yourself. But Dr. Kara Pataki, can you walk us through what is addressed in this statement in regard to effects of opioid use and management?
Yes, this is a very interesting question, and we will try and briefly describe what the statement includes. So we have mainly presented data on the impact of opioids on the hypothalamo-pituitary system and on bone health. So taking us through this journey, if we start with the hypothalamo-pituitary gonadal axis, the opioids have inhibitory effects and they can cause hypogonadism. In terms of management, this includes discontinuing or reducing the dose of opioid. This would be the first management step when possible, of course, and in parallel, further management options for the pain should be discussed and provided by the relevant experts. If this is not possible, we could consider a change to buprenorphine. This is an opioid with a milder or no suppressive effect on this axis. And if these are not feasible, gonadal hormonal replacement needs to be considered, aiming to avoid the negative consequences of untreated hypogonadism. That's about one axis. If we move on to the hypothalamo-pituitary-adrenal axis, we know that low basal morning cortisol levels and inadequate response of cortisol on dynamic testing have been reported in people on opioids. What is the significance of these effects? And what is the occurrence of clinically relevant adrenal insufficiency, admittedly, are not fully elucidated. So we don't have data to underpin a consensus on the need of daily physiological glucocorticoid replacement. And in our statement, we mentioned that for those who are not able to discontinue their opioids or wean to a dose below a threshold, which could result in opioid-induced secondary adrenal insufficiency, so in these patients, physiological glucocorticoid replacement may be needed. And of course, monitoring the response to this treatment is also necessary. Another option in selected cases would be to prescribe stress dosing for times of illness and not the daily maintenance dose. If we move on to another axis, if we move on to growth hormone secretion, we know that acute administration of opioids has a stimulatory effect. However, if we offer opioids on the long term, there are some data which suggest that we may have compromised response of growth hormone to dynamic testing. Now, currently, we don't have evidence that could underpin recommendations on the management of this compromised response of growth hormone on dynamic testing in patients on long-term opioids. If we move on to prolactin, acute administration of opioids increases prolactin secretion. Chronic use of opioids can also lead to high prolactin. How can we manage that? If the patients are asymptomatic or if there is galactorrhea, which is not bothersome, we don't do anything. In symptomatic patients, though, who cannot stop or amend their opioid therapy, we could consider offering dopamine agonist treatment, or alternatively, if the patient has hypogonadism, we can offer gonadal hormone replacement. Moving on to the hypothalamo-pituitary thyroid axis, there are variable and inconsistent effects, but we can speculate that long-term opioid use does not cause clinically relevant thyroid dysfunction. And if we go to the posterior lobe, if we look at the arginine vasopressin, the data on the effects of opioids on AVP secretion are inconclusive. And finally, on oxytocin, what are the effects? We have studies from women in labor, which suggest an inhibitory effect. So opioids can inhibit plasma oxytocin during labor. And if we move on to the bones, we leave the hypothalamo-pituitary system. There are data which show that opioids can have negative impact on the bone homeostasis and metabolism. A reduced bone mineral density, increased risk of fracture have been reported with potential implicated mechanisms, including direct effects on bone remodeling, increased risk of falls, and hypogonadism. And of course, in such cases, we need to consider if we can stop or reduce the dose of opioid, and if we pick up osteopenia, osteoporosis, management should be tailored to current osteoporosis guidelines. So yes, this statement included a lot of data, a lot of information in more detail is in the paper published in the Endocrine Reviews.
One of the reasons the Society issues these scientific statements is to identify gaps in research. And I think we just maybe heard a few of them, but can you highlight some of the gaps mentioned in this statement?
Yes, thank you for this question, which was one of the major purposes of this statement, as we discussed earlier on. A lot of gaps, but just some examples. First of all, we need data on the type, on the route of administration and regimes of opioids, which are associated with higher risk of hypogonadism, not only in males, but also in females, which should be derived from studies which adjust for various confounding factors. We need data on the benefits, but also potential risks of gonadal hormone replacement in premenopausal females and in males with hypogonadism, which are attributed to opioids, and these studies should be well designed. We need studies which look at standardization and validation of diagnostic tests and criteria for opioid-induced adrenal insufficiency, and also studies that will clarify the prevalence of hypoadrenalism with different opioids, different doses, different routes of administration. We need to identify patients at risk for developing adrenal insufficiency while on opioids, and clarify if there is individual susceptibility to the inhibitory effects of opioids. We need to further research to elucidate what is the clinical significance and what is the optimal management approach of opioid-induced adrenal insufficiency. We need to look at the clinical significance of compromised growth hormone axis in patients on chronic opioids and in people with opioid use disorder. We need data on the true impact of different opioids on the AVP release after adjusting for confounding factors and, importantly, considering the hydration status of the patients. We need research on the impact of opioids offered as analgesics on labor outcomes. We need research on the role of oxytocin in the treatment of opioid addiction and withdrawal. And it would be useful to have data research on the differential effects of various opioid agonists on bone homeostasis and factors related with them. So that was just a small taste of the very many gaps in knowledge we have.
A small taste. Well, those are some very important gaps that were identified. You know, I always like to conclude an episode thinking about what's next. What are some future directions that are outlined in the statement?
The future directions are dictated by the gaps in knowledge, and we have presented them in the statement, as we said. And if we wish, though, to focus on the most important ones, in my opinion, this would be the effects of opioids on the hypothalamo-pituitary-gonadal axis. We need to have research and a future direction to look at the effects of gonadal hormonal replacement not only on the known manifestations and consequences of hypogonadism, but also on other aspects, like those related to pain management and to recovery of people on methadone maintenance therapy. It would be useful to have a future direction looking at fertility outcomes in these patients. Further axis that is important to be focused on in the near future is the hypothalamo-pituitary-adrenal axis. We need to clarify whether we are dealing with true secondary adrenal insufficiency and what is the best way to manage it. And in the bone field, I think this is an important area for future directions. We need well-designed prospective studies which will account for confounding factors, which are many in these people who are on opiates or opioids. And these studies will elucidate the long-term benefits of hormonal replacement on bone mineral density and will facilitate the development of safe and cost-effective guidelines on the bone health of chronic opioid users. Also, to add another important point, which for me should be in the future, at a global level, we need studies which will investigate the awareness of clinicians, and particularly those who prescribe opioids, but also the awareness of patients on the endocrine consequences of these agents. By this way, we will be able to identify gaps in the provision of care in this group of patients. We will gain additional insights on the implications of the opioid crisis on our healthcare system globally.
Well, I think we've learned a lot today, and we've also learned that there's still much more to learn. But we are out of time for today, so I want to say thank you, Dr. Carrie Vitecki, for coming on the podcast today and sharing your expertise and working with your colleagues on this scientific statement. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and it has been a real pleasure to give this podcast. Many thanks.
That's all for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll include a link to the scientific statement in today's episode description. Be sure to check it out. There's quite a lot in there that we just couldn't cover on the podcast. We'll be back soon with another fascinating dive into the world of endocrinology. Until then, thanks for listening.
Endocrine News Podcasts are a free service of the Endocrine Society. To learn more or to become a member, visit the Society's website at www.endocrine.org.